You're listening to the Modern Producer Podcast, expert talk on livestock housing and animal husbandry. Get ready for today's episode.
Well, hello again, and good morning, because this actually happens to be a podcast we're recording in the morning. With any luck, we won't have the air guard flying over us today. Tim Kerbis here, as most times I am. We have with us today, Ben is sitting in as well. For those of you who know Ben, he might chime in, might not, but if somebody walks through the front door, we still have to answer that. So he might wander off, and that's fine. We also have with us today a guest, Britt Roman from Munters. Without much beyond that, let's get Britt in here. Britt, why don't you introduce yourself?
Okay. Thank you, Tim. Thanks for inviting me to come over. I appreciate this opportunity. Like Tim said, my name is Britt Roman. I'm best known as the technical or the area rep for Munters. My role with Munters is we are manufacturer reps for Munters. We also have another company that we work under called Ag Environmental Resources. But through Munters, the main purpose that we're here this morning, Munters is based in Lansing, Michigan. And we work in dairy, swine, poultry, and greenhouses. Most of the work that we've done with you, Tim, has been in swine and turkey business. My personal background, I have been in the industry close to 30 years. Well, I guess it is 30 years this year. I graduated college in 1990. Hate to date myself that much, but graduated college in 1990. I'm originally from Central Texas. Bit of an implant myself.
Really? Okay, I'm going to jump in there.
Sure.
We're in Texas. I never knew that part.
Yeah, no, being a Texan, I would always call it Central Texas. Other people would say it's South Texas. I grew up between Austin and San Antonio.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Braunfels area? Or
a little bit further north. I was more like San Marcos, but yeah, okay. General vicinity.
Gotcha.
Yep. Cool. So I spent a couple years at Texas A&M, then transferred to a smaller school called Angelo State. After college, I went to work for DeKalb Swine Breeders. Growing up in Central Texas, didn't have a lot of experience. That's not your heart of pig country, obviously. So it was a little bit unique in that I landed at a swine company. And that's where I met my wife. She's from South Dakota. Now, she was sitting in the room. She'd argue with this next part, but it has a lot to do with how we ended up here. Her family farms, raises cattle in northern South Dakota by Aberdeen. And I was with DeKalb for 6 years. That was kind of my introduction into the swine world. Then I went to Hogslab for a number of years. Bounced around a little bit here and there, but my heart was always in the ventilation side. Munters is the parent company of what used to be Aerotech. A lot of people that are listening will probably know that name, Aerotech. Aerotech was based in Michigan, a family-owned company in the 50s. Munters bought it. They're a ventilation company. We work, like I said, in all the industries. We have our team represents Munters in 15 states and part of Canada. I focus primarily on the turkey and swine and dairy, dairy throughout all the way down to Texas. Swine and turkeys predominantly here in the Midwest.
Sure. Cool. So it's interesting. You said 30 years this year, which is, it means you've started 10 years or a decade before I did, because I actually hit my 20 year mark, and I'm not going to date myself beyond that. So you guys are, and this is kind of a follow up from the, if anybody's seen the interview from World Pork, you're not a direct employee of Munters, more your company that you own and manage, if I understand this right, represents all the Munters product line.
That's correct. I can't remember when that change was made. I want to say it was back in the 80s. Munters, it was Aerotech back then, did have the traditional sales force fully employed. They made that change to go to manufacturer reps. And like you alluded to, so we own our own company, which I mentioned earlier, Ag Environmental Resources. Our agreement with Munters is if they don't have a product, we have the ability to represent it. So within the United States, they're just a ventilation company. Anything has to do with getting air in and out of the building. They don't have any heaters, so we work with Space Ray for heating solutions, okay, either forced air or radiant, which again is fairly big in the poultry side. We've got a few smaller items in there as well, but those are the biggest two items.
Just sort of to fill out the portfolio,
correct?
The other little stuff. So how, as a manufacturer, how has it been going these days with everything happening, with supply chains kind of breaking down or just kind of being disrupted?
That's it's been an interesting year for sure. We had just barely got over the whole COVID situation, and I don't even know if we're really over it. And then we've had all the shortages. And it's like, had somebody use the analogy yesterday of, we had the toilet paper shortage, you know, pretty soon everybody's trying to run and find toilet paper. Well, it's pretty soon, you mentioned there's any kind of supply chain shortage and somebody needs five tensioners. Well, they're going to order 20 because they hear they're short. We've seemed to come out of it a little bit. We're fighting. We have a good and a bad in one situation. Munters is based in Michigan. So we are, all of our products are predominantly manufactured and assembled in the United States. The bad thing about that is it's Michigan, which is very, very restrictive on the whole COVID situation. Our factory is still pretty limited on number of people back in the office. And the plant is running, but some very, very strict COVID protocols. We're meeting timelines decently, but it's still been a struggle.
It was apologies to Michigan. Have you mentioned to them that South Dakota is open for business?
I have every chance I get. Yes, that's... We tend to have about biweekly calls, just kind of getting an update on everything. And I never miss a chance to pound that little bar of that we're doing well here.
So, yeah, we obviously have sold a number of your fans primarily. We have our own lines on some of the other stuff like inlets. So sometimes it works, sometimes we use our own. And with Ben sitting here, we've seen that even with orderings, it hasn't been really a real disruption. There hasn't been a backlog of ordering for parts where we've needed a motor or whatever. It certainly has been on a decent schedule.
Yeah, we feel pretty confident, and we've actually, this led us to get some customers back. We've actually gained a little bit of market share, I do think, because we're not so reliant on products coming from overseas. Munters is a global company. Munters, the parent company, is actually based in Sweden with other companies in Germany. There's different divisions within Munters, but since so much of that product is sourced and made here in the United States, we've, like I said, been able to be pretty good about deadlines. I've heard some different building companies have been out 26 to 30 weeks just on products. Mm. And we're probably anywhere between 2 to 4 to 6 weeks, depending on the given product.
So I've always assumed, and maybe incorrectly, that Munters was a German company. What is it actually considered to be?
It is actually considered a Swedish company. Its corporate headquarters are in Sweden.
That's the third time I've been wrong. Oh, wow. Okay, so I have to change that line. For some reason, I always had this in my mind that it was German. I'm not even sure why, where that came from.
And that's fairly common with the name Munters. It definitely sounds Germanic than Swedish, for sure.
Sure.
Yeah, Carl Munters was actually the founder. The little bit of history on Munters was more of a commercial air treatment. Carl Munters' invention was called the desiccant wheel. And that's, you'll see the air treatment units, their dehumidification units, usually seem like a Walmart or a supermarket. And that's kind of where that comes from. And it was his involvement with treatment and cooling pads that was the relationship between Aerotech and Munters. Our cool frame, we used Munters pad. And then when the company came up for sale, Munters bought it.
Kind of a cool history. I didn't realize that you made that much actually in the States. We've sold a lot of the Munters Drives fans, some of the regular just single phase fans, the smaller ones as well. Mm-hmm. But you were telling me earlier when we were discussing ahead of time that you actually make the motors in the U.S. And that's actually was news to me.
Yeah, and it's another interesting, and I know this is not just about Munters the company, but the original Munters Drive, as we call it, was the first ECM motor, so electro-commutated motor, or some people refer to them now as a permanent magnet motor. The very first one was made in our lab by our in-house engineers. It's not a new technology. It's a new to having it built on this scale. But they actually, the magnets and the first windings that they did, our engineers were doing it in-house and building it. And some of the first parts were 3D printed. So the history of that is pretty cool, too.
Hmm.
And most of that has stayed here within the United States.
So how far back does that go then? Like, when did they do that? You mentioned 3D printing on some of the first models. It can't be that far back then.
I might have misstated that. I know the first housings for the drives today, they're in aluminum or cast aluminum. The very first ones were plastic, some of the very, very, very first ones. I came to work for Munters in 2013, and I saw the first prototype probably in 2011 at World Pork. So 2011 would have been the first time the Munter's Drive was displayed.
Yeah, I guess I don't remember the history. We haven't been working with those types of motors that long.
Right.
So I guess I really don't have a connection to that.
Made such an impression on me. I was working for a different company at the time, and I always remembered AeroTech as being one of the innovators in the industry. If you go back and look at the history of Munter's, AeroTech actually, they were the first ones that actually developed putting a cone on a fan. They were the first company to actually develop a fiberglass housing for a fan. Up until that point, most of the ventilation was done for poultry, and those were, you know, fairly inexpensive. It's typically galvanized housing. The family that created AeroTech put the fiberglass housing in. They did the cast aluminum blade. They put the cone on it. I mean, those were all some of the first things that they started.
So all that, those other products like the fiberglass housing, the cast aluminum blade, all that, is that U.S. made as well then?
That's U.S. made and made in Michigan. So that's...
We need to bang that drum harder, Britt. What's going on? How come we don't even know that?
Well, if you go to the trade shows and you see our big fans out there, they do have a Made in Michigan stamp that's usually on it. And then the latest fan that we came out with, we displayed for the first time at Central Plains Dairy. Actually says 100% Made in America, so they're pretty proud of that one.
Got a big old flag on there.
Yeah, it's pretty good size.
It works. It markets. I have no problem with that. So you did Central Plains. Now, it just triggered a thought in my head. World Pork is coming up here in the next, was it 2 weeks from now?
World Dairy.
World Dairy, sorry. Yeah. Forgive me. It's, yeah. World Dairy is coming up and still in Madison, is it not?
It is. Yep. Coming up starts the September 28th, so it's a little bit... Usually it's the first week of October.
Sure. Yeah,
so.
And you have to be at that one?
I do, luckily.
Every single day?
No, luckily we split that one up a little bit. So, it happens. It's within our territory group. There's two of us that really focus on dairy. But we will get some help. There's some other people based in Michigan, and some of our corporate people will come down and help.
Because that's still a five-day show.
It is a five-day.
That's a long time.
And we love Saturdays, too. Saturdays are so much fun at trade shows.
The day you get to go home?
Oh, yes. And it's like every other trade show. They're nice being there, but the struggle to get the crates back in. And, of course, we're a fan company, and we got to have a big fan. So we're usually the last one to get our crates. So
sure.
Have to find inventive ways to pass our time.
Yeah, I don't envy you guys. I've seen that. I haven't been to World Dairy in a number of years, but I remember seeing that a lot of companies split up the week into two different teams because it was just too much for one group. And then you looked at those guys on the fourth day who had to be there for the whole time. They were just dead.
Right.
They were done. It's too much.
You know, we don't do that many trade shows. I mean, we're pretty much specific to livestock shows, but I can't even imagine the guys that, I mean, the true road warriors out there that are doing 30 trade shows a year. My hat's off to them. There's no way I could do that, even when I was younger.
No, thank you.
There's something about, I guess I know myself well enough. I'm a bit of an introvert. It does get tiring just being in groups and being on and like that all the time. Yeah. Yeah, I all kinds of things that come to mind. I just couldn't do it. I agree with you. It just simply would be, I'd be burnt out after about 3 months, I think.
And it's kind of a funny conversation between my wife and I, because I'm very much an introvert as well. And it constantly amazes, we've been married, 30 years. And she goes, I just can't believe you're a salesman. And then she goes, and I see you at a trade show. I was like, who is this guy? I was like, well, that's why I come home so tired. And it's because I'm having to put myself out there like that every day. And it's a little bit of a stretch.
That's why you can be a bit of a bear at home at times.
And a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. I get that.
Yep.
So you mentioned Central Dairy then, and you displayed something. Is that new 74-inch fan you've been working on?
It is. We kind of, as an answer to a lot of the other markets have come out with, up until that point, our largest fan was a 55-inch. And there were other companies in an effort to leap past us, and our performance came out with a 72-inch fan. Years ago, we used to have a 60-inch. That one didn't fare very well. So AeroTech Munter's doesn't do anything very fast, regardless of what the salesman wished for and asked for and plead for. But they have come out with the 74-inch. Today, it's just a belt drive, but we were close to releasing a Munter's drive for that fan as well. And that took us to the point having to go back and re-engineer what that drive was. Again, it took a little bit longer, but instead of just going and buying something off the shelf, that's one of the pluses of Munters having in-house engineering. They basically took it back down to bare bones and looked at it and said, what can we improve? What do we need to change? And they did take the input of the sales team and said, this is what we see across the industry. This is what the performance is. This is what the industry needs. This is the kind of numbers we're looking for. So they really, really went back to the drawing board to redesign a fan to be what the industry needs. So, I mean, even in the belt drive version, it's very, very impressive, the numbers, and we're very excited about the Munters drive coming.
Yeah, that'll be kind of a fun thing to take a look at, because you've I don't know how much you can relay and how much is still waiting for official release, but the numbers you've relayed to me seem fairly impressive on those things.
Yeah, and it's we've come out with the numbers, and it's even with the Munters drives on our other fans, the difference in performance as far as airflow, really not that much difference between the Munters drive and a belt drive. The difference, of course, will be in the efficiency because of the direct drive and because it's a variable speed. But yeah, the belt drive that we've talked about right now at a 0.1 standard pressure is almost 52,000 CFMs. And the CFM per watt is 22, right at 22 CFMs per watt.
Really?
So we're
that's actually better than you had quoted originally when it was still in development.
Yeah. It's surprised. We were surprised. And again, it's wanted to get them out. We've got a few that are out now on test. It's too bad that we hit a year when there's not a whole lot of building going on, because this would have been a great fan to get out and get some exposure on. But we're taking orders for next year. I'm pretty excited. We got a lot of people interested in it.
And that's with the Munters drive on the 74 already, or is still the belt drive?
That is the belt drive today. The Munters drive should be released. We'll have the first samples here in 3 weeks. Okay. And we've got some test sites that they'll go to. So
cool. So I guess we'll shift gears a little bit. Just because where are things looking at otherwise? Okay, there's a product line we talked about and some of the new stuff. If there's other products, certainly you feel welcome to bring them up if I haven't even heard of them.
Sure.
Where do you see things going forward? Obviously 2021 has been a bit of a
repeat.
I was starting to filter myself and just I'm not gonna use those words. It's been a bit of a show.
Yes.
Where do you see things even closing out this year and going into 22? Where are things looking, or how's the industry looking for you, or from your perspective?
I would say for our group specifically in the Midwest, and again, our group covers, we go from North Dakota to Texas, east to Missouri, west to Colorado. And again, we predominantly, our group is swine, poultry, and poultry for us would be layers, and then dairy. The layer side of the business has been amazingly strong. Again, that still goes back to the whole Prop 12 situation. And that has fed, obviously, some interest in the swine side. Again, there's been initiatives to try and move sows to loose housing. The poultry is still remarkably strong. We're having a great year in poultry. Swine, again, this year was pretty tough. Our biggest forte in the swine side has been in the sows. I would say as we've had more and more conversations with integrators that are looking to take advantage of the Prop 12, or not take advantage, but have to meet those requirements, we're optimistic if we can get building materials down reasonably. Like I alluded to a little bit earlier, on the dairy side, we're seeing a lot of dairy expansion, which is kind of hard to fathom because milk price is not great. But there's a new cheese plant going up in Kansas, and that's going to be fueling some expansion. There was recent expansion in the cheese plants here locally, but this I-29 corridor for South Dakota and dairy is big. It's there's a few small integrators, but there is expansion. There's lots of people. I mean, we joked about South Dakota's open for business, but in the dairy world, there's a lot of interest and people coming from the West coming to South Dakota.
I've seen that or reports, and we don't work as much in the dairy. Not that we are opposed to it. It just hasn't been our focus. that even either Western Minnesota or the Eastern side of South Dakota, I-29 corridor, like you say, has had a lot of expansion. Is that South Dakota scale, or is that actually starting to scale up to some of this big stuff that you saw in Arizona years ago, or even now, where there was 10 and 12,000 head dairies were fairly common? Are we starting to see that here, or is it still sticking a little bit smaller than that?
No, it's definitely the economies of scale that we saw in poultry that went to swine is definitely now coming into the dairy. And it's again, kind of the same growth in technology is helping fuel that, just like it has the other industries. Again, without naming names, I was just at a 10,000 head dairy in South Dakota last week, sure, looking at something that they're doing. The ones that are coming from out west, and a little bit depends on if they're still... One of the biggest changes in dairy has been the advent of robotic milking. Mm-hmm. That's been a huge thing. And when it first came out, that was really, it was making the small farmers more profitable. And now we're starting to see these larger integrators adopted into their parlors as well. Because just like everything, your business, my business, labor is a big, big holdup. And it's hard to find that guy that wants to go out there and milking. You know, we used to always joke that there's nobody married like a dairy farmer. They're married to the farm and their spouse. And the robot, you know, doesn't need healthcare. It's not ever sick. And it's milking cows 24 hours a day. Now the integrators are finding a way to do that as well. But it's, you've got to have full tankers of milk that are going to the cheese plant. You probably got to have a tanker or two a day. And it's, it can't just be, I'll go to this farm and pick up a little bit. So the stuff that's coming from out west, those are 5,000 to 10,000 cow dairies. And it's continuing to grow.
What's the biggest dairy you've ever worked on?
Me personally, that we've done, I believe we've got one. It's over by Green Bay, Wisconsin, that is right at 7,000 cows under one roof.
What's the biggest one you've seen?
Probably the 10,000 cow dairy I was just on.
Sure.
I know there's some bigger ones down in the panhandle of Texas. The Faria brothers are well known. They are working on one, supposedly. I've heard a lot of different numbers about this, but I want to say it's like 20,000 cows under one roof, and it's going to have multiple rotary parlors in it. It's supposed to be phenomenal, but yeah.
I've been on some in Arizona that were 12,000 head, but I've seen pictures and heard reference to a 55,000 in Oregon someplace. And I'd have to go back. I remember the numbers clearly, and anybody who knows me knows I know numbers and don't forget them. It was that big. It was just phenomenal. And what escapes me and what I can't remember is the amount of acres it took just to produce the forage for that dairy. But I remember it being about 55,000.
Wow.
Seems to me it was a back before hired hand became part of the AGCO umbrella, or under the AGCO umbrella, essentially. I was talking to somebody there. So this was probably a decade ago or more, where they were referencing this dairy out there. And maybe it's been broken up. Maybe it just shut down. I don't know. But at that time, it just blew my mind, because I thought I was seeing something big when I saw this 12,000 head. And then they go like, yeah, let me just show you this. And I'm just like, well, fine, you win.
I know we get out west and they talk about some of the, you still have a lot of cows that are in open lots. I mean, from southwest Kansas down to Texas, Arizona, there's still open lawn dairies. And I think that's another change. Part of the reason that we've actually added some salespeople this year so that we can focus and spend a little bit more time focusing on dairy. We do see an opportunity, because those efficiencies have to come in play just like they have in every other industry. Mm-hmm. You know, chickens were outside, hogs were outside. And as soon as the chickens started coming in, a lot of the hog guys were feathers guys too. And I said, well, that worked pretty well. Let's do it with the hogs. So we're starting to see that with the dairy as well. Even without the robots, you've got to be producing X amount of milk. And if that cow once you get above 72 degrees, you're starting to face heat stress on a cow and she's starting to lose productivity. Well, since the high plains of Texas, you know, lots and lots of days it's over 70 degrees. So if we can bring them inside and create an environment, that's where we're starting to see that.
So what's the lower limit on cows? They have a fairly broad band or neutral zone thermally.
Really, if we keep the barn above freezing, we're doing good. I mean, they're happy at 40 degrees. They can go all the way down to 30 degrees. It's just, we got to keep them dry. You can't be, you got to keep probably the biggest thing in the barns we're getting so big as they're respiring in that air. You got to keep the air dry. You got to keep the fog out of the building. And that's, you have battle pneumonia in cattle bigger when you have them indoors. That's a bigger thing. Minimum vent, just like every other species, is critical.
So, yeah, it's about a 40 degree neutral zone that they can operate well in.
Correct.
But yeah, you get to the lower levels, then, well, oxygen and humidity levels start because, well, that's with every bit of livestock, except with pigs, you're typically working in 68 to 75 degree range.
Right.
Yeah, that's a side of the things I grew up, you know, working with cattle, but mostly beef. And so I was exposed to a lot of dairy operations. But in Manitoba, the scale was, growing up in Manitoba, I'd probably, somebody had 100 cows. It was big when I was back then. And I'm sure there was bigger ones. I just didn't see them. So you're just looking forward. You think that 22 will be more of a, I hate to use this word, but I'm going to more of a normal year. Oh yeah. Everybody's just like, oh, come on. Normal. What's that?
Yeah. And since you said that, I'll say this too. I hate to use this term new normal. You know, what is the new normal? I hate that term as well. So, I do. I'm just talking with people. I feel like we're going to get back to what we're more accustomed to. Is that better? Maybe not normal, but more accustomed to. You see everything, and building supplies are starting to get better. Copper is supposed to be getting better. The few things that I'm starting to hear would be interesting once the harvesters start rolling and seeing what our corn crop really looks like. That's the next thing everybody's starting to freak a little bit about. So,
yeah, it's I've just been traveling the last couple of weeks with the corn. Well, you were at Pembroke a few weeks back, and I'm sure you've heard that they harvested everything in 10 minutes this year at 3:30 in the morning with tennis ball sized hail. And every single acre got written off for them. So that's a weird kind of mess up there, but other places, what have you heard? Is a forage, the corn, the silage, what's that coming off like this year?
What I've heard so far is people very concerned about right when the cob should have been filling, when they were in the milk stage, when we had all the heat and no moisture. They're very worried that we've got ears, we don't have much weight there.
Does that affect feed quality or quantity more so?
Quality.
Yeah. So calories might be there, but they're not great calories.
And it's very interesting. So I've spent a lot of my time this summer. I've been down in Texas actually working on a couple of different remodels, and they've had it's interesting, the dairy market in Texas, you have two centers basically. One, it's over kind of south of Dallas around the Stephenville area, and then actually in the High Plains. In the High Plains, typically very, very arid, very low humidity, a lot of irrigation. This year they have had, the guys were telling me they've had the best crops they've had in 10 years. They've had rain after rain after rain, which now my dad used to always tell me, and he still lived in Texas, that if they had a wet summer, then we were going to have a bad winter. And if you look in the almanac, that sounds like it's going to track true, but their silage
is in lots of snow.
Yes. Lots of snow and lots of cold.
And they actually used to travel through there in a different lifetime. I used to drive through, and man, those storms can get nasty. You wouldn't think it in Texas, or somebody who doesn't live there hasn't passed through there until you. That can get as bad as North Dakota.
Yep. But they've had the silage down there is very good. I mean, the concerns I've heard about corn has been probably more in the upper Midwest about what our crop's going to look like. So
even going into the bin for the other species with the just corn, not so much silage, it's been, you know, very irregular. Some guys are thinking it'll come off well, if not great. And there's other guys that are just like, we're going to be buying. We've got storage that we need to fill, and we're going to have to find it somewhere other than our own fields.
Right.
So it'll be, the next month and a half is going to be interesting, because it's really going to, set the tone a little bit for what guys are going to be prepared to do going forward, because some guys will have a fairly good outlook and other guys are going to be squishy.
I agree completely.
What do you see on the poultry side? More like turkeys, do you guys get into, besides what we do with turkeys, do you ever get much work in that market?
My group, again, with you and with the Hutterite colonies here in South Dakota, that's probably been our biggest involvement with my group. There are some turkey producers in Michigan, Ohio, that's another rep group. They do a little bit, but I'd say probably our group does most of the turkey business within Munters. It's not a big area for us outside of us here in South Dakota, North Dakota.
Sure. All right. My coffee is refilled. We're back. We took a no sense in hiding it. I needed to refill my coffee. So and we took a break and here we're back again. So Britt, you get out there a lot. We were talking about it earlier, about it being a introvert's, well, I wouldn't say nightmare, but it's the part that just drains things a bit. Talking to guys, what are you hearing from producers? What are they looking for? What kind of questions are they asking? What are they kind of asking of the market?
That's a good question, Tim. It's kind of one of those things that we talked about at World Pork. The biggest questions we're getting right now continue to revolve around technology in the barns and how rapidly we can get it into the hands of users. We are the platforms that we have for controlling ventilation have so rapidly grown from when I first got into this industry. And again, I already dated myself, so I know how far back that is. My kids would say boomer, although I'm not. But even the controlling of the fans, I hate to use somebody's tagline, but they refer to it as having a smart barn. And that's one of the things we're seeing continued interest in, how fast we're going to get there. The Munter's Drive was one of the big technological advancements in that we were able to take large fans and have complete variable speed on them. But that required a little bit of a specialized control. One of them that works is one I see as I walk into your office here. There's two or three of them that are out now, but there's also another fan company that has taken fan control. I have to give them credit. I'm not going to name them, but I have to give them credit. They have a permanent magnet motor that is actually Wi-Fi capable. It sounds really neat, and it is kind of neat in that any fan in the barn is Wi-Fi and just has an address, just like any other thing that you're controlling Wi-Fi. So that at any given point within any set of parameters, that fan can be operated at half speed, low speed, whatever, which is kind of neat. The only downside of that is the same fan company has a control system, and that control is completely in the cloud. I have seen some drawbacks from that. It's still pretty nice. Even as we're ramping up technology, it's still pretty nice to have a control on the wall. You can flip a switch if you need to.
Yeah, that having that ability to do localized overrides, if you will, sometimes. And I think I know who you're referring to. I've been watching some of their technology. Sure. It does look kind of cool. I'm not sure where we're going to go with it yet. It seems like they're applying it more on the dairy side currently than anything else. Do you see there being a bit of a gap between the stuff that your engineers are developing, that these other companies are developing, this high-tech, cool, smart barn type stuff? Is there a gap between what's coming out and the ability to get all of the knowledge on how to use it well into the hands and the brains of the actual people working in the barn?
Well, I know from the governments, even in South Dakota, we're pretty rural, but it seems like every government you hear talk is talking about speeding up the access to the internet. And there's continual growth in the internet, and companies are finding ways to get better burst of information out to the cloud, if you will, to get to the hands of the user. So I think we're okay there. Kind of going back to what we were talking about on the control of the fans and other products on the wireless, I'm with you. I think that's a little bit too far. There's so much expanse within the building. And I know just driving down the road, I'll hit good signal, bad signal, much less getting in a complete big metal building. We're working on, and I know other companies are working on, going with a Modbus communication so that we can still do the same thing, but we are having an actual wired connection. But we're still able to limit the amount of wires that are going from the fans back to the control. Again, it's not having to worry about ambient noise, if you will, inside the building interfering with the signal.
So with all this information, all this capability, are we starting to ask guys to have to spend too much time paying attention to how to run their system rather than looking after the livestock that they were hired to look after?
Well, to me, what I've seen and what I've heard when it's come back from the producers is you don't necessarily have one person that's good at both. You have somebody that's pretty good at crunching numbers and looking at data, but then you've also got very good people that are looking at the animals themselves. So you can hire somebody, maybe he's not quite as high a price point, but somebody's very good on the animal husbandry side is making sure the sow's fed, the cow's fed, milked, that they're healthy. And then you've also got somebody that's watching the overall big picture. You got a manager that doesn't necessarily have to be in the barn every single minute. You got somebody that's in there taking care of animal welfare, and you got somebody else looking at the overall picture of the system.
There's a lot of information, a lot of data being generated. It's not just a one-way street where you push a directive down to a fan and say, run at this speed. We're starting to get to the point where we're getting two-way communication, where the fan is telling you what's going on, the temperature of the fan, perhaps the motor, running conditions, and the bigger picture in the barn, the environmental conditions or the feedback, the information we're gathering, more sensors, more information. Have you guys been doing any work or seen anything on how do we actually make this information consumable to the point where you can make decisions? Because sometimes you get such an information overload with all of this that you end up either getting into a logjam where you just can't make decisions or good decisions because you have too much information to properly digest it all.
We tend to see that once we've given somebody everything that they want, and then look how full their plate is and says, what the hell am I going to do with all this? And I was like, well, you asked for it. Here it is. Yeah. So it almost starts, we have to go from that, and then we start backing it back off. And then again, trying to find if there's got to be somebody that's going to get all that information and start parsing it out to the people that need it. I think it's too much that any one person can do, but you are starting to see those integrators that have those people on staff. It's kind of like the managers in baseball. It's not just about, I mean, we're looking at all the stats and got somebody's breaking it down to that level anymore. We're getting that level of complication within these barns as well.
I've seen a few guys, and one specifically, Pig Hill, has done quite a bit of work with dashboards in trying to make this information, this tremendous amount of information, consumable and visual enough that you can actually understand what's important. Mm-hmm. And then they refer to it as the leading indicators, not the lagging stuff, because you can get a lot of information and without even realizing you get bogged down in lagging indicators that you're reacting to things that happened 5 days ago.
All right.
Which isn't helpful if it's not happening right now. So have you seen and then I've talked to other guys or people and companies that have been working on some of this. Have you seen anything in terms of trying to develop a platform, a dashboard platform, where you can actually make it visual to the barn people themselves?
There was a big initiative. It was actually at another dairy meeting, and I would say dairy is probably even worse than swine, if you can believe that, as far as how many different dashboards and how many different indicators and feedbacks that are coming back to the dairymen. And you don't have the level of, you don't have the layers of management within a dairy that you do like the other systems. And they are definitely working on, and they've put it out to the control companies and the fan companies and everybody else, that we need to put our differences aside and try to develop that very dashboard that is cooperative amongst competitors. We haven't made a big inroads yet. I don't know that we exactly know what we need. I think that's the next thing that's coming. I think the guy that figures that one out is going to be onto something big. But then again, everybody's got their proprietary information within those controls and how much they want to share with everybody else. That's the big sticker.
That is a struggle, though. You're a manufacturer. We work more on the wholesale retail distribution side, in a sense. You're not exactly a manufacturer, but a rep for a manufacturer. Yep. But we work more directly to the end consumer, and it's such a problem is that you get different types of platforms, and I always use the Android-Apple kind of analogy. Apple tries to lock everybody into their ecosystem, and everything you do has to be Apple for it to work well together. And that's fine. Some people are okay with that. They just like that. Now, Apple doesn't have, you know, market share, or majority market share, hasn't for a long time, probably never will. Then you get that open source type stuff like the Android, which is all, it's the Wild West at times, right, where everybody and anybody can do anything. And we see that in our own industry, where there's some companies that try and lock you into their ecosystem, where everything you got to do is got to have their name on it, which I don't think in the long run is going to be the way it just simply isn't going to be the way that the majority of the market is going to go. And we can use the cell phone world as an example. Right. 60% of the world chooses to use Android devices or something other than Apple.
Right.
so that's a struggle we have how do we take these varied, because companies that we work with as manufacturers, because we work with multiple different ones for various reasons. Sometimes a better product comes from one manufacturer and a better product, a different that we need, comes from a different manufacturer. Sometimes it's different applications where one manufacturer makes something and somebody else doesn't. What we really need is, how do we get all of this information that's being generated into a commonality, something that everybody can digest?
Again, I think that's the big question. I don't know. That'd take a lot of people being willing to share, and that's not something we've done real well in our industries. We don't play well with our toys with others.
No, it's a big sandbox, and none of us like to be in the same one, so I don't know how.
Well, and we went down, to be honest, and I guess we're not that much different. When we first came out with the Munter's Drive and started going down this road, like I said originally, to control at variable speed, there was really only two controls on the market that would do it, because you needed a 0 to 10 output that would control fans. And that was brand new. And we had a couple of controls that would do it. We had a way to operate it with a different control platform, but it didn't to its optimum efficiency. But that did lead to some change. We got some newer platforms that are out there. Again, Fusion, Maximus really came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And it's not just because of our fan by any means, but one of the things that you talked about, the ease to access what's happening inside the barn, is so much easier to see when you walk up to either of those two controls. There's other great controls out there. I'm not just locking those two in. But that ease of access, that was one of the key things, I think, that led to their market share growth. Mm-hmm. It's going to continue to happen. Somebody's going to come up with it. We're going to have to figure that out, because at the end of the day, the producer is going to pay for that ability to have that access.
I've been getting the requests from two sides. I know there's companies looking at it. We were at the Carthage Swine Vet Conference here, or I was specifically, a few weeks back. And I know there is people working on how do we actually, they're thinking about it. How do we actually make this consumable? Because there's just too much information generated to even if you hire somebody to look at it, it's just too much to make good decisions on, because you actually need people working in the barn who have their hands on things and who have the feel for the barn, able to see the information well enough to make decisions based on it. So you can't have a standalone person paid strictly to digest the information and say, here's what we're going to do, without being out in the barn. So there's that aspect. But on the flip side, I do actually have the people in the barn and the people running the barns, not just the ownership, but the people running the barn, saying, how do we visualize this? There is a significant demand. Mm-hmm. I don't like you. I think I'd have to agree with you. The person who figures out how to actually aggregate all of these different platforms into something that people can actually use well and configure to the equipment they have. And that's the struggle, is that one guy might have 80% of the same type of equipment that a different guy has, but that 20% doesn't play well together, and you still have a problem trying to understand all that. The person who figures that out is going to be like the guy who invented the remote car start on a nice big boat someplace, retired.
Well, they're going to have to figure out what is the most important leading indicator. I mean, because again, there's so much that they can glean. So what's the one indicator that's going to, it used to be, it's temperature or it's water consumption. And it may be still be. And there's some other companies that are coming out with scaled down versions. We go to the peak and then we come back down. We have some lower versions that's too much. I just want to know this. I just want to know this right now. And we're actually working with another company that's doing that. It's very scaled down. Just picking a few indicators, very easy to put sensors out into the barn. You can get an app on your phone, so you can just get it in real time, get real time alerts. Mm-hmm. And some people are saying, yeah, that's all I need. I don't need this, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of control. I just need these very small indicators so I can make a decision today.
Some of the challenge in this I see from the guys who have put up dashboards, the leading indicators are not electronically related. It's information, it's stuff that matters, it's stuff that relates to actually performance and things that are going to make you money. But it's something like, how many times do you interact with this particular farrowing crate? And they know that if they track that and keep it above a certain level of, they call it touches on the pig, right, that their pre-wean mortality goes down. And there's a direct correspondence to those two things. So they track their touches on a pig, knowing that it'll affect the lagging indicator, which is their pre-wean.
Right.
How do you even track that well barn to barn?
Well, that gets into a whole paradigm shift on how we operate these barns too. Because it used to be, we want to get in there and take care of them, and we got to get on because we're late. We'll get back into labor. Yeah, we got other things we got to do, and that's kind of where I was getting to that point of, you hire somebody that's some of those first automations on the feeding. You know, everything was about feeding and the sow and the farrowing crate. If you had her intake up, I mean, that translated back to milking capacity, which, you know, went into your lagging indicator weaning weight. Well, that's all they were concerned about. Well, if we went to automated feeding, I mean, I worked in that when I got out of college. I would go in there, and as fast as I could throw feed to the sows, and I could go on and go do something else because that's all I was worried about. I got to take care of this. Again, it's getting back to, so we've had some shifts and change in on how we're staffing these barns. You're paying the manager a little bit more that can manage the personnel and maybe those higher level type of functions. But I mean, you're right. It's that almost gets back to, we have to change how we're staffing these barns too. You can allow those people that time in there to do those touches, because you're right, it's going to pay benefits later.
It's a weird thing, whereas we're raising technology levels and requirements on ability to use technology, and at the same time, it's starting to require a higher level of stockmanship.
Oh, absolutely.
It's crazy, because you're actually saying, well, we need both now.
Right.
And I don't know that we've answered that question. And on top of that, we're dealing with labor shortages in general.
You know, and the other trend, this goes back a ways too, if you think about it. It's funny. Again, we've both been in the industry long enough. What used to be cutting edge was old, and now it's coming back again. So my explanation, or my example, would be like nurseries. When I first started working with Hog Slab, we were building nurseries all over the time. Then that started changing to wean to finish barns. But the problem was, you had people that were used to raising everything in the swine side was always contract finishing with large integrators. And then they started seeing, as they transferred over to wean to finish, well, these pigs weren't doing very well. Well, a guy can take care of a nursery barn. It's not the same guy that's going to do well with a contract finisher. Mm-hmm. When you try to make a contract finisher guy a wean to finish guy, it's a disaster.
Yeah.
And they've taken them back over, and you see more ownership, because again, it's when a guy is responsible on a daily basis, he's taking care of that animal. He has a lot more input than just a hired hand going in there and just take care of chores. Completely different.
And we've seen even, some of the companies we work with is that first couple weeks off the sow are almost more critical than the rest of the time they spend in the barn. It's sure. You're going to set the stage for whether they're going to do well or not do well, and it's hard to undo whatever happens there. So if you do it well, great. It's hard to undo it, even if you're not a great finisher guy.
Right.
But if you do it poorly, you can't undo that either. And even the best finisher guy struggles to take junk pigs out of a nursery.
Yep.
Or out of that, post-weaning stage. So yeah, I've seen that a lot. Whereas that in the northern climates, of course, it's always been for a different reason. Nurseries have been always built simply because it's cold.
Right.
For a significant portion of the year. And when you got to run a room warm, it's more efficient to have a room designed to run warm.
Right.
Rather than a really, really big room that you then start expanding space into for bigger pigs.
Right.
So just sort of starting to wind down to the end here, but what other technologies, is there other stuff that you've seen, other things that we haven't touched on, things that we maybe should bring up that you'd like to plug on the Munter side?
We are in the process, I guess, plugging on the Munter side. It's one of the unique things about, as I said, Munter's is a global company. If you ask somebody in Europe, Munter's, what's the first thing that comes to mind? They're going to say poultry. I mean, that's probably what we're more known about. We have universally, that's more what we're thought of. There has been some changes. We're coming out with some new fans specifically designed towards the broiler market. Cost is a bit of an issue, but part of that is also we're coming out with the second generation of Munter's drive, which should be a little bit more robust, should be a little bit more efficient, probably a little more airflow. Should start seeing those. We're having that second generation is coming out about the same time as our sample for the larger fan. So IPPE this year is probably going to be pretty exciting. I don't normally go to that show, but that's where we normally showcase a lot of that new stuff. That'll be down there.
Yeah. That's in Atlanta again, like always. Okay.
Yeah.
That one tends to overlap with the Des Moines show a lot of times.
It does. Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the calendar if that's going to be a conflict again this year or not.
I haven't either. That one is, again, I don't get into that market much, so I don't usually go down to that one. I get enough travel without having to go to Atlanta. Seems every time I do, they have an ice storm, so I try to stay away.
So, well, I guess we can kind of sort of wrap it up there. Go ahead. what if guys want more information, where do they go? Obviously, I'll reference here at the end our stuff, social media and all that, but Munters obviously has a website. You might as well rattle it off.
Okay. Yeah, it's, if you want to learn more about Munters, it's not the best website in the world, but at least it's a starting point. It's www.munters.com. It is a little bit, it kind of has everything. You have to kind of go pick your industry. You will find a big page on there and you can find the ag side. As far as our group, if you want a little bit more detailed information about us as a group, our company name is Ag Environmental Resources. Our website is agvent.net. So agvent, like ventilation.net. We've got some different pictures of our products, our people, our installations, a little bit of our history of our company. So welcome.
And, of course, we'll be coming out with another Modern Producer magazine this winter. And I do believe you guys got some content scheduled. Yes. I'm looking forward to that. You don't need to give it away right now. Don't need to ruin that. But yeah, look for that with Munters. Will have some, or well, Brit or Munters. I don't know who we'll call Brit's content will be out in our Modern Producer. We'll see what that is. And if anybody does want to follow up on that, certainly you can get a hold of us. our website is out there as well. Newstandard-group.com would be our standard or our website. Of course, we're on social media. If you haven't found us by now, what's wrong with you? Come on, get on it. You know, easy enough. All of them. I don't need to rattle them off. That'd just be boring. But our YouTube one is probably our exciting one right now. We've got five freedom videos just in a series right now coming out. Just to date this podcast a bit, the first freedom video came out just recently prior to this. So get out there and check those out. So yeah, if there's anything else anybody wants to hear, again, we're always looking for different ideas on what we can bring you for information, podcasts or articles, blogs. If you have anything, just let us know. Reach out to us on whatever platform you prefer. And we appreciate you guys listening.